Welcome to Bay State Golf. I'm Sean Melia. It is Masters Week. I've got Paul Burke on the other line. Paul,
how you doing, man? I'm in such a good mood. I'm so excited.
For those of you listening, he just slept on a...
Fantastic. I've got a 2026 vintage Masters Cup just arrived. I also have a Masters shaker that I have in a nice azalea in here. I'm going to pour myself a little cocktail before this. Listen to that go in. There we go. That should last me about 10 minutes of this pod. And they even gave us a little bit of a stir this time. See this thing? For those who are watching, you know, audio medium, it's a Masters stirrer. Shouldn't forget this. Masters coaster.
Coaster.
Yep, this little azalea package arrived the other day. And it's just the best way to kick it off. I kind of look preposterous. I'm wearing my hat, my straw hat, over my headset. So, what is it? That's probably function over form or function not over form. It has felt like, I don't know about you, but for some reason, like Butch Harmon's comments earlier this week about the Ryder Cup, and I was just like, are we really going to be talking about the Ryder Cup? Like, I thought we were past that, and like the Masters was sort of the way that we were all done with the Ryder Cup, which, man, can you imagine if the U.S. had won the amount of complaining that would be going on with the Ryder Cup still? But like, they lost. They got smoked. And so I really have been looking forward to this week. I mean, I always look forward to this week. Everyone always looks forward to this week, but I thought this just be one of the better transitions into spring. It sort of feels like it's really coinciding with the turn of spring here, which it doesn't always do. I mean, I have no idea where to go from a picks perspective, but it's going to be great. It always is great.
That's the best intro I think you've done in the Jonas Blixt inaugural. We've been doing this for so long, and I would encourage if you are just listening to this, you can go over to YouTube and actually watch it, and you can see Berkey with a straw hat over his headphones. I completely agree with you. I just feel like this winter has been so long up, at least in the Northeast, that this really does feel like rebirth this week with the Masters. I've played 9 holes of golf. I'd say the last like 4 or 5 years, maybe aside from the COVID year, there's been like golf has been played. It just felt like it was more a part of the spring. This year feels like it is the start of spring because it's been so miserable. So I echo what you said, and I'm super excited. And I'm so excited that I want to go back to 2025. I want to answer Rory's question after his win. At the press conference, he sat down and said, what are we going to talk about next year? I'll tell you what, Rory, we're going to talk about two guys who aren't even in the field first. I want to talk about Tiger and Phil. Not because it's Tiger and Phil, and I think they had a chance to be competitive this week. But this is the first time since 1994 that one of these two is not playing in the Masters. And I think for you and me, we've talked a bunch over the years on this podcast, off this podcast, about like our Masters memories, our history actually kind of starts in 95, like Ben Crenshaw winning.
Yep.
And then you get the Faldo is a little more crystal. And then like 97 locks everything in for us. And if you're a 40-year-old who, you know, if I'm 42, you're 40, like this is 41. So this is, this is like the era of our Masters, and this is the first one really that, you know, both of them aren't going to be there. 94 was a very long time ago, and I just think it's worth like pausing and just marking it just because of who we are and who, you know, how we've spoken about this tournament for so long. I think it's a big deal.
I get very romantic about this tournament. I love everything about it. I love, you know, even watching Tiger's cut streaks. Mickelson, you know, say what you want about him, but him finishing second a couple years ago was preposterous. Like, it was amazing. Like, he tends to throw back the clock like a lot of people do at Augusta, right? Like, that happens. And so there's always this like nostalgic feeling about the tournament, about the players, especially about Phil and Tiger. Like 2004, like, I always like to frame tournaments more in like, how did you feel in the moment versus how do we feel like retrospectively? And I think Phil's 2004 won't get enough of the happiness that it did in the moment that it will in like in history. Like, people were extremely happy. It was amazing. All of that being said, I'm less sad about this than I thought I was going to be. And I think a lot of it has to do with Phil barely played. He's kind of a weird figure. Tiger had not would have come into this tournament only playing a TGL. And like, I don't know. It's not quite like I get the marker of it, but I'm not like they almost would have been a distraction from the tournament, which I don't even think that they would want in and of themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I think this record, this streak is more, it's more of a Phil streak. And if anyone was going to keep it alive this year, it was going to be Phil after what happened to Tiger a week and a half ago.
Oh, but no, he was definitely going to play though. Like, if the car crash doesn't happen, he was playing in the Masters.
How do you know?
He was playing. He was absolutely, he would not have done TGL. He absolutely would not have done TGL if he wasn't playing.
Okay, I don't know. I'm not sold on that, but I mean,
and
Phil has
the
missed
cop that he was. Did you the cop video? He's like, you can play the Masters. He goes, I'm trying to.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I mean, he said that at Genesis. I mean, this Phil has missed one Masters since 1994. He played in 95. He played all the way through. 22 is the only one he's missed in this window. He missed 94 because he broke his leg. He played in 93. So, like, an amazing streak on his own. Before we move on, I just want to actually think it's interesting to compare the two of them at the Masters and the record. So, Mickelson has 29 appearances in this as a pro. He's won it three times. He has 13 top 10s, 9 top 5s, missed the cut 4 times. He also was low amateur in 1993. And then Tiger, 26 appearances, 5 wins, 9 top 10s, that's 4 less than Phil, 7 top 5s, that's 2 less than Phil, 1 missed cut in 96 as an amateur, and then 1 WD in 2023 after he made the cut, and he was low amateur in 1995. It was interesting putting those two up against each other. I think I was a little bit surprised at like Phil having better top 10s and top 5s. Obviously, he's played a few more, more missed cuts as well, but 13 top 10s for Phil and 9 top 5s is pretty incredible as well.
Awesome record. I mean, he's...
Yeah. Just gets lost. Sometimes it gets lost with Phil. And I do it too, because I don't like him.
The only really surprising record is the fact that Faldo has won 3 times and I don't think has ever come in the top 10 other than that. It might even be higher. Like, most of the people that play well and win also like are racking up top 10s. Like, I think Nicholas has like 15 top 10s. So yeah, that is, it's not surprising. It's like, it's really quintessential horse for course.
So that brings up another thing that I wanted to touch on quickly before we get to this year's coverage. I just jotted down 4 names that didn't win the Masters that I think are like guys who should have probably had the game to win a Masters. Not that they were, I mean, these are all great players, but guys who seem like they were built to win. Ernie Els, Davis Love, Greg Norman. Oh, I only have 3 here. I think I had a 4th and I took them off. Like, those
Weisskopf,
3 to me,
maybe,
stand out. Weisskopf was one I thought about. And like, even Justin Rose was another one, thinking about like 3 runner-ups.
He still has a chance, though.
And he still has a chance. But I just, yeah, just got
I'd
me thinking
a little
about
bit with Davis Love. But
so I think Davis Love is he might not have had the, I think he had the game, but he's also just, I don't know, like the Southern thing, he kind of like never really came super close, but he just feels like a guy who probably maybe should have won a Masters because maybe he's a white guy from the South who was playing golf in the 80s and the 90s. Maybe that's what it is.
I mean, he won one very soft major, had the talent to win others, but didn't really like, I don't know. I look at it differently from like Greg Norman, who number one player in the world, constantly won hundreds of times across the globe, did win two majors, was like in contention at the Masters. Davis Love like should have won Masters. I'm not sure you could ever say Davis Love should have won a Masters. Whereas Justin Rose, you can say yes. Greg Norman, you can absolutely say yes. Ernie Els, like probably.
David Duval is another one. I feel like
David
a little
Duval's
bit
another one. Like Davis Love to me doesn't belong in that group, but I get what you're saying. Like he's supremely talented.
Yeah, and it just got me thinking about like those guys, and then who are the guys in like 10 years time who were, and even with Rory last year, there was always the he'll get one, he'll eventually win one. I think Els had that. Els was part of that back when he was playing. Like Els will win a Masters. I think people just thought Norman would win a Masters, and it's hard.
But Norman had, he was going to win a Masters for like 12 years of contention, like something crazy.
Yeah. I mean, from 86 to 96, it was a pretty, pretty tough little stretch, capped off by those two, which they played back to back on Golf Channel today. I don't know if you saw.
And they just forget 87, right? Like when he lost in a playoff to a Larry Mize chip in.
Yeah. On a chip in. Yeah.
Impossible chip in.
Yeah. Just felt like a Greg Norman 2 hours, like, sorry, but we're just going to kick you in the face. We're going to show both of these back-to-back.
If I were to think of somebody now that didn't win one, it would probably be Xander, right? Like, who's just been there. Yeah. That's one that comes to mind, that if he weren't to win, which you can't take anything for granted in this sport, you cannot. Like, Will Zalatoris isn't playing the Masters, and he was unbelievable.
Yep.
So you just can't take anything for granted. And, you hear this conversation about how many majors is Scotty going to win? And people are just like penciling him in for 8 majors. Like they were penciling Rory in for 8 majors.
Well, he's still going to do that. I'm not. He's got the best caddy in the world next to him.
I mean, nothing to worry about him now.
No, he's
I just
good.
Heard on I just heard on Golf Channel the past couple of weeks, he would have breakfast at home, fly up to Augusta, play 18, and be home for dinner. Like, yeah, I'm not worried about Rory.
Yeah, he's gonna be fine. Nice Rory's not worried about Rory, which is maybe a little scary. Masters coverage content. I think we talked about this last year. Just the fire hose of stuff. But I have one other quick thing that I've thought about this week. The value of it being in the same place has become, I think, more and more apparent, and it draws a stark line between this tournament and the other three in a lot of ways, because I think there's more creativity within like the independent media who has created a bunch of really good stuff, whether it's like Fried Egg, No Laying Up, Jeff Shackelford, just people like have time to dig in and know this is evergreen because next year it still makes sense. And I don't know. I just think the farther we get into the 4 majors, and in 20 years time, as we get older, I think it becomes more important. And I think it's why the USGA has picked some anchor sites so that they have a little bit more like of a story to tell every few years at the same place. And it gives the media an opportunity to like, all right, we're going to make something. And in 4 years time, we can use it again. 5 years time, we can use it again, because it doesn't feel like Shinnecock's every 10 years. And it just makes storytelling harder. So
does that make the Players Championship come off even worse because they have the exact same setup and they still don't even come close to getting to what the Masters does?
Yes. And I think it and I don't know if this is also
comparatively speaking, I think they do a better job with that tournament. But the PGA Tour has a competitive advantage where they go back to these places every single year.
Yep. I think the PGA Tour doesn't seem interested in, I don't know, letting other people tell stories as willingly as the Masters is, where you can like, here's everything. At this point, it's like, here is all of our stuff. You want to watch 1986 on YouTube, like pop it on, go for it. And then it helps people actually watch it and think about things. I mean, I watched the Rory, like every hole thing he went this afternoon. It was like so good. And it shakes like little thoughts free in your head that could become like a story or a project or like a topic somewhere, whatever it is.
I think post-production golf is, there's obviously very clearly a market. Just look at what YouTube golf does. But they need to thread the needle between like what they did with their reality show a couple weeks ago at the Players, they had guys that weren't in it. Was it good content? I thought it was pretty good, but you know, I don't think it's going to move the needle on it. I don't know. I think the cover, it gives you, it's a lot. It's a lot of coverage. It's great.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot. I also love
bouncing around personally.
Like, what do you mean?
Have to do now, like bounce around. All that stuff, having to get, you know, take, I don't know, maybe I need a new TV, but like it takes me like 3 minutes to go from Prime to regular cable TV.
Yeah. And then like jumping, you can't jump channels anymore. If you're like on Prime, you're watching Prime.
Yeah. So I don't know. I still think there's, especially as they get into relationship with apps, I think there's a lot to be worked out there.
Yeah. Agreed.
And like, can I just pay $100 and just get like everything Masters? Like
I know you're drinking azaleas out of a branded mixing mug and a plastic mixer
I've already spent $190 between the food package and the drinks.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell me that this guy who's wearing, you know, his wife's hat, she got at Augusta a couple years ago, wouldn't spend $100 for like a potpourri of Masters that just got like literally everything on my TV. Like, that's the thing. Like, I don't want it on my computer. Like, I want it on my TV.
Yeah.
I haven't solved that yet.
Yep. All right. General storylines. It feels super wide open this year, obviously. So, I mean, the things that I'm just going to throw some out to you. We can pick one and dig in on it. Pick a couple. Obviously, for me, Scottie Scheffler's form, top of mind. Like, what's he going to play? Like, do we get the Masters magic where the guy who plays well here just kind of shows up and plays well here? Rory defending. I thought the freed up Rory was going to have a great second half of last year, great majors year, and kind of fizzled. Was kind of just an odd experience for Rory and the media and whatever else was going on with his life.
That's what I want a documentary on. This is what happened the next two months.
That's after the Masters.
You would have thought he kicked away the Masters, not won the career Grand Slam. Which,
trying to unpack like Rahm and Bryson as another, like they're both coming in playing well on LIV, which hasn't really been the case in the past, at least both of them playing well. Koepka being back on the PGA Tour, hitting the ball like a maniac and putting like a maniac at the opposite end of the spectrum. Like Morikawa, who was everyone's favorite heading into the Players, gets hurt. And now he's saying like he can't hit certain shots in practice today because he's worried about his back. Like, that's not promising. He's not on my list of guys I would pick this week. So those for me are like, obviously the big names, but the things that are going to make this interesting as far as the top end of the Masters. Where do you have one you want to talk about?
Oh man. I mean, this might be one of the toughest questions you ever asked me. It's a weird feeling, honestly. And so does this produce a fluky winner? You know, I don't even know, pick your person. Like, no one's talking about Xander. I feel like he's been playing okay. You know, Spieth has been hovering around being, you know, top 50 player the past couple of years, but like this place obviously brings it out in him. Patrick Reed's also another one, like a LIV coming back that's actually been playing very well against very good competition, and he was not playing well last year and was in contention and almost I think he came in third, fourth, maybe. Like
he came in third.
So I don't know, there's not this, like, it's sort of refreshing because, you know, if Tiger was here, that would be the storyline. Like, that would be it. And now I feel like there's maybe less juice Monday through Wednesday. And we're just like, give me the golf, baby. Like, let's let the course be the storyline. Let it get a little spicy. Let's just get into the golf.
Yeah.
You know, probably, I don't know, 30 guys that can win. That's a lot. Maybe.
That might be a little high.
That might be a little high. But I think there's at least 20.
You could probably make it. Yeah, I guess. I was just watching live from as well, and they broke down the last, since I think 2016 to now, or 2012 to now, the 15, like the average winner is ranked 15 in the world. And the 12 years before that, it was like 37 in the world. And from the mid 80s to the mid 90s, it was like the high, like 28th in the world. So this last like little 13 year chunk has picked out some of the best players. So Data Golf does this, sent a newsletter out. It's very good. And they basically give out like points up through this past week and who has the most points. And like last year, Rory showed up and he had 43 Data Golf points, which was the least amount of the last four winners. Scottie Scheffler showed up the year before and had 51. Like the top end was getting all of these points. This year, the number one point getter has 29 points, and it's Jacob Bridgman, followed by Chris Goddard, and then Scottie Scheffler, Cam Young, Akshay, Colin Morikawa. So like the top end is not playing as well, and the pack is playing very well. Kind of just an interesting dynamic too across the field that there isn't really anyone who's playing awesome. Like Jacob Bridgman is playing the best golf over the last, you know, 2 months as far as this
and
kind of data
he's
goes.
Not winning the Masters.
No, he's not winning the Masters. I think that's the other thing. Yeah, I mean, he's a first timer and he did win RIV, which can be a
yeah, it usually is a good predictor.
But he's getting asked about Trevor Lawrence in his press conference today, like because he went to Clemson. He's like, is Trevor going to be out here this week? He's like, I'm not really sure. I heard he might be. It's like, what are we doing? Whatever.
Did they ask you if Bob Cousy's going to come follow your golf tournaments?
Yeah, Cousy and yeah, I guess it'd just be Cousy at this point.
Is Bill Simmons going to come out and follow you?
Yeah, so it is wide open. I think the Scottie stuff, just as far as I think people don't want to make a big deal of it, but it will be a very big deal if he has a bad round on Thursday. If he shoots something at like above Scottie Scheffler on Thursday, it will be a discussion around like what's going on with this guy and why can't he get off the blocks in the last 6 weeks. It's not a story right now in my mind, but it will be.
No. The harder this course plays, the better it plays into his liking, I think. Because he knows it so well. It's, you know, I think if the winning score is under 10 under, which people are thinking it could be this week because of how the course is playing, like that to me plays right into his wheelhouse. If it's like more 14-15, then I think it brings a lot of people into play.
Any thoughts on Ted Scott just feeling like he's out there a lot right now? It feels a little funny. The guy, like big, they just did a big feed. He's doing like video stuff.
The guy caddy for the most out there guy in the world in Bubba.
Well, okay. But it's just an interesting dynamic, especially given the praise that Harry Diamond is getting for not being a part of the Amazon Prime. I don't want to talk about any. No, thank you. And then on the other side, you've got Ted Scott, who seems a little thirsty.
You follow him on Instagram. He does his stuff all the time.
I know, sermons.
He's kind of a thirsty guy.
But that's different. I think that's a little different than getting like the golf.com full exposure.
Maybe he knows he's getting canned.
I'm watching it,
and he wants some. He wants
to keep an eye on it.
Publicity.
I'm keeping an eye on it for partly that reason. This is my new caddy thing.
So, pay attention, right? So Tiger with Fluff, he fired Fluff, right? Because Fluff was like a little bit too much of a thing, and he had obviously unprecedented success with Stevie Williams, but then at some point Stevie like was writing books and talking about Tiger, and it was like, nope, see ya, buddy. But very clearly he was good for Tiger, and then he won one major post.
Yeah, and went through a few caddies, right?
Yeah,
but he wasn't playing enough to like really feel like he could have a caddy regularly. Yeah, just something I'm pinning. I'm going to put a pin in it.
Hey, I didn't have that on my radar, but I think it's a good
I'm going to put a little pin on it. Bryson and Rahm, any do you feel like they Do you feel like they can? They're going to compete.
How do you not feel like they're going to compete? I mean, Bryson has a ton of has had pockets of really good success. Like, he's had good rounds on this golf course. So, like, I was kind of battling this, and someone, it might have been Brandel, was just talking about how his game doesn't fit it that well because he's got the single length irons and the side hill shots and all these things. Like, but he still shot like 63, 64, or 64, if not once, maybe even twice. But like, he's had low 60s rounds or mid to low 60s rounds. And so I think those can stack on top of each other. And Rahm's won and been in contention, should probably maybe could have won another one. So I feel like they're in as good a shape to contend this week as they ever have been.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the first, I think this is maybe one of the first Masters and even majors where they have enough momentum from live events, which I don't necessarily know if that's ever been really the case. I don't know if that's because they're playing 72 holes now, that the cream rises a little bit more over the course of a longer tournament. So they're going to be up there because they're just better at golf than all of those guys over there. And that's just going to be, so they're going to come in just feeling like they're playing better and they might compete. I mean, Bryson was in the final group on Sunday last year. I'm interested. Do you think he can win here? I don't necessarily know if he's going to win a Masters.
So those are two different answers.
They are.
Yes, he can win here. He's shown that he can play the golf course, you know, and he's a major champion too. And I think that matters. Do I think he's going to? I mean, geez, he's got to go up against a pretty heavy crop of people for the next 15 years, 10 years. But yeah, like if I had to bet, given that he's been in the final group, you know, I don't think he's going away anytime soon. Like, he's got his exemptions. Like, I'd say probably, yeah, probably.
What are his exemptions at this point?
At least at U.S. Open exemptions. That'll take another.
I guess 24. You know. Yeah, so that'll be 29. Okay. So he's got this decade at least locked up.
And then,
that's right.
You know,
okay.
Who knows? He's always had these. I don't think he's locked up for live next year or the year after, whatever it is. He's still really good. Like, he's a very good golfer.
Yeah. Reed and Koepka as another duo to talk about. Man, if they both have, not even just the Masters, but if they have a good stretch here, Reed's going to get his PGA Tour card back. But if Reed and Koepka both have a good major season, that's better than what they were doing when they were with Liv. That will be a good, I don't know, maybe a way to get Rahm and Bryson thinking about their decisions if they maybe have
I think
struggle.
Rahm is probably more tied in to Liv, from my understanding, than Bryson is. Like,
yes.
I think Bryson's contract is up. I don't think Rahm has like something that's coming up in the next couple of years.
Yeah. Because he's in his third year there.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Brooks just got a ton of money and wanted to come back.
Yeah,
and
but he's playing.
I don't know if you heard. So, I don't know. Did you listen to Patrick Reed's press conference at all?
I listened to a little bit of it.
So when they asked him about why he wanted to come back and like what went into the decision, and he was just like, you know, I wanted to play more traditional golf. He's like, I was on the European Tour earlier this year, and like being on the range with the range full, but being in the last group and then slowly seeing the people walk away, and then you're like the last one on the range. He's like, that is, which you don't get with Liv because it's all a shotgun start.
It's a shotgun.
Like, everyone just goes out there, and like, and he's like, and then like having to tee off when you were two ahead to start the day, and then you tee off one behind. Like, he just described very,
yeah,
in like,
that's
like an
amazing
awesome golf nerd way. It was like,
yep.
Oh, like the way, like what you just described, like that's probably why you've won a ton. And like, I could see why going out to live, he was just like, it feels like you're going to a scramble. Like, everyone takes their cart and they go to the shotgun.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought, and I'm not a Patrick Reed fan. I appreciate his game and his competitiveness, but the way that he was describing that, like that was sort of like getting romantic about the minute parts of the game.
Yeah, that's a great point. Just, I mean, if I just put myself in going to play, you know, a charity shotgun versus a qualifier or something where you're playing on your own and you're at the range and you're kind of eyeing people, you're watching guys leave, other people flow in. I've never been in a final group of anything in my life, but you do have that sense of like the ebb and flow of the people and the tee times, and like that energy is very different than everyone just showing up and being driven out to their holes.
Driven up. And yeah, like I've had it point. A couple times in a club championship, and it's a different feeling because everyone knows, like, there's this ebb and flow of who's going where, and then there's just nobody there. Like, it just the way that he talked about it, if you haven't listened to it, I'd highly recommend going to, because you could tell, like, where I'm not sure this was Brooks's motivation, like Patrick Reed, he just needed to be back on the tour in that sense.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, he is. I don't know. His whole thing is, I don't particularly like him,
but he's worthy.
But it feels like he's got a very good. Yeah, he's got a good perspective on. Like he talked about the rollback somewhere. He was with Joseph Lamagna, but he says stuff. You're like, oh my god, okay. You think about this in the way a lot of like golfy nerds think about it. Maybe because he had to be a golfy nerd, you know, like he wasn't a great junior, you know.
He was good. He wasn't great, but
he wasn't great.
I think you can get to be a golf star in a couple different ways now. But the old school way is you just weren't good enough for team sports. Or you just were a loner, right? Like that was the way to get to golf stardom. Mostly because you just like to be in your own bubble, and that's
only child, like Rory and Tiger, only children, like, just
only yeah. children. Your dad might have liked golf, or your dad like it didn't follow your traditional, you know, sports path like all of the other sports pretty much do. Like whether it's soccer, baseball, football, basketball, like you just follow the normal path. Like you pick a sport, but you follow kind of a normal path. Golf is a little different. Like, I mean, we've said this a million times. Like, we were massive outliers in 1999, 2000 when we wanted to play golf.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
we were the only ones that thought it was cool. Now we literally witnessed it become cool. But he, even though he's younger than us, he was that like original mold of like kind of being a loner, having not a lot of friends, and just was like a massive golf nerd.
Yeah, it's been 10 years since Jordan Spieth. Let Danny Willett in. That's right.
You can see they're leaning a little heavier into the 40 years since 86 than they are since the 10 years.
Or 30. I mean, 30 years since Norman and Faldo. It's like the Sixes have some little juju. I know Mickelson won in 06, so who knows? But I just was thinking about Reed and it's 2016. Let's Danny Willett in. Does he?
Let it just be like a cautionary tale to every single person with this tournament. And you actually can look no further than what happened at Anwa on Saturday.
I know.
I distinctly remember, like vividly, the feeling watching that tournament, being like, "Man, what a boring Sunday! Like, what a boring Sunday! Like, with Spieth, like this is gonna be he's and like I actually like Jordan Spieth, but like, and then boom, and he's not even close to winning. Same thing with Tal. Like people, like these are all smart people, and they get to that 12th hole, or even last year, Rory like almost kicked away on 13, like 15. Like this tournament is never over.
Yeah,
never.
So one thing that Rory just kind of talked about that got me thinking is and even with Spieth at 12, asterisk tally, the place is full of like check marks. There are check marks around the golf course. And I think guys, and now the women in the ANWA have them set. And if they like, if they get past them, sometimes it's the next hole, there's something else, or they can't get past that check mark, whether it's like the tee shot on 12, just getting it center of the green on 12, like getting through 13, maybe having to make a birdie. I think
Tally hit the center of the green. She just hit it a little too far. Like that was,
she did a lot too far.
Yeah.
She might have, yeah. But it's just, Rory was talking about, like, I had it. Even, I think he said, you want to be 2 under through three. You know, like, ultimately, you want to get through one. You want to try to birdie two. You want to try to birdie three. Like, that's his mindset. This was him talking about his Saturday starting 3-3 with six threes. So it was kind of like, that was the dream start to get 3 threes to start.
I think that's a very aspirational start for somebody that can, that basically makes mincemeat of a really hard hole on the first hole. Like, his first hole is a lot different than the average tour pro, where he can fly that bunker on the right.
Oh, yeah.
I think Rory can make birdie on the first hole, like, a decent amount. Most people can't.
But even just having it, Augusta creates those little moments for you throughout the round. And, like, as a viewer, we know them, but it gets, I think it can mess with people. And I think there's been a lot of talk about three this week. I think it's because Rory spoke about it as being kind of an interesting little moment in Sunday's round last year. Scotty chipped in 22 when he won. Yeah. It can flip, but I also think that whole
Bryson
interesting because this is a little bit like we talk about Concord Country Club. Two is a par five, and then you get a drivable par three or drivable par four, the third, and then you get a tough par three as the fourth.
I don't think we can actually label three as a drivable par. I think we can call it a short par
four. It's a short par four. That's fair. It's 350 yards. And people are like, they did a whole segment on it tonight. But I think just those little moments within the round that can get into guys' heads, and if they start to fall behind, they press. And then it gets them into more trouble.
4, 5, 6, 7, and it's like, geez, if I play those one over, that's amazing. Like,
yeah, you're holding on for dear life.
And then you get like 8, 9, and you get it's the best. It's
just, that's what makes it so great. And obviously, Spieth on 12, and or listening to Rory talk was another kind of thing that just crystallized for me. Like, this place just messes with you, and if you get ahead. Whether it's in a career, whether you're like Jordan Spieth and you win in 15 and you think like, I'm going to win another one. I'm going to win four more of these. This is going to be awesome. And then suddenly he's walking off 12 and he has not won a green jacket since.
And, you know, with coming back to a place every single year and different than TPC Sawgrass, which I was sort of comparing, I don't think the general public can take you through the entire golf course of Sawgrass. I can't, so I'm pretty confident the general public can't. We know where all, not all, but like we know where a lot of the demons are buried, right? Like you can think of what happens on 11, like think about Rory last year on 11. Like that was a pivotal moment, very pivotal. Plenty of people have hit it in the water there. And then 12, 13, like you can go down the list, like you know, and these guys are mostly students of the game. And so like they know where they're walking. They know that Tiger dropped on 15 and hit the flagstick and went in the water. Like they know that Xander a couple years ago, when he was right on the lead, hit this atrocious shot on 16 into the water. Like they know all this stuff. They might not know that Kenny Perry went bogey back in what was 2007, terrible bogeys to lose the Masters. But I know that it can be done. Tiger in 2005. Bogey after one of the most, probably the most iconic shot.
Yeah.
Bogey to almost lose. Yeah. Like, it's all over the place.
Yeah. I put the list of first timers up here because there's a lot of them. I'm not going to read through them all, but they're in front of you here on the agenda. Is there anyone here that stands out to you or like you're interested to watch or follow? I have a couple.
I mean, it's got her up, right? Like it's, I just think that he has like that escalator potential where he seems like a great guy. He keeps like crying after his wins and you're just like, dude, what are you crying about? It like he's got this emotion.
But then also posting on Twitter, like, show me the money.
Yeah. Which is like, kind of funny. Like,
the dynamic is funny.
I think that has potential to like capture maybe not a wide audience, but like he's very clearly not your stereotypical golfer, right? Like he played other sports growing up, Jersey guy, went to Rutgers, then Oklahoma. Like, I don't know. Like, I think that he has potential. So never him played the Masters. He's also probably in the best form out of all the first-time golfers.
Yeah, Bridgman first-timers. Too.
Bridgman, yeah.
Bridgman too.
So yeah, he's the one that sticks out. I don't think there's any surprise there. I mean, there's Mason Howell. I think's a pretty good.
Yeah.
Story like from an ant like.
I'm hoping to watch a little bit of him, or at least watch his rounds on the.
I mean, you can't watch it.
I watched him at the Walker Cup this year, and he's just he seems like a dude already as a
where's he going to school?
In high school. He's going to Georgia. He's going to Georgia. He's from Georgia. Yeah, he's awesome. I think I'm also like Marco.
Is he
Penn,
definitely going to school? Do you think?
He's committed. Who knows if he's gonna go, but he's committed to Georgia. He was playing with Harris English today and another bulldog because there's like six of them in the field. Like Marco Penge is interesting. I think some of these guys who have had like who have you've done it on the PGA Tour a little bit. You've played your way into like late Sunday or early Sunday stuff. I mean, he had a pretty good little stretch at Riviera. He might be in the top 50. Yeah. I'm not entirely sure, but he hasn't won anything, so that would make the most sense. But I don't know, like him and Goddard, who has won, is kind of the same where it's like, all right, you can bash it around the park. Let's see what you can do in a major that requires.
That's
a
why
little.
The Sony victory for Goddard was so impressive.
Yes, but now this is the next level. Like, okay, and he had a good.
Penji has shown that, whereas like Goddard winning at Sony, which is historically not a bomber's golf course, I thought was like that to me meant more than his win at Phoenix that he had a couple weeks later.
Yeah. McKibben is another one that just a young kid. I don't know.
Because he's on live now, right?
He's on live, yeah. He might have snuck into the top 50 before the end of the year because there's two dates for that. Or he won something in Asia. Like there's a couple events that aren't there a couple events that you can win out there?
It's not like the Open Series.
I think he might have won something in Australia.
Nine, South Korea.
He might have won something in Australia. February. Maybe he won an Australian event. But
he didn't win the Aussie Open.
No, he didn't win the Aussie Open. Whatever. So we want something out there. I think that's what got him in. Just because he's young, he's playing on live. This might be his only chance.
He gave Rory the big middle finger going to live. So, and Rory said as much.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a kick in the teeth. I'm going to take the money. I'll see you later. And then I'm still going to get in the Masters. Yeah.
Good for him.
All right. I created a few of our little TikTok before we get to our picks here.
I gotta be honest, I wasn't really following your TikTok stuff, but
well, the time you get like who's on the clock here, who's feeling the pressure of time.
I this read that more thing in the we've social done media sense.
Fast. No, I didn't spell it that way. I spelled it like the clock.
I know.
The last couple episodes we've done just thinking about who are some guys, and I broke these into some groups here. I think there's guys feeling a little bit of pressure because they don't have a major yet. So that's Hovland, Fleetwood, Hatton, Ludvig. I put Cam Young in here. I'm not quite sure he's there yet. I don't think he's maybe feeling the pressure, but I think those first four are all Europeans, which is not purposeful. I think there's guys who have gotten like a little bit of a lease on life here and are playing well, but I think the window is short. I think that's Justin Rose. I also think that's Jason Day as far as a guy who's kind of just playing well. He's probably in his mind thinking like, I think he probably cares about winning a Masters. Like, I think it's a big deal as an Australian.
I think it's everything to Justin Rose. Like, I think he's changed his entire life.
I think, yeah, I'm not comparing it to Justin Rose, but I think Jason Day would like to win. No, I'm just putting these two. As far as like they both have one little last window of like Jason Day might be cooked in a year's time with all these injuries. Did you see the transcript I sent you?
Yeah.
Someone's asking about his balloon therapy.
that had to be Andy Johnson that asked him.
That's right. I was trying to find the sound to hear the voice because it was one of those guys, I would imagine.
So where but do I you think put somebody, the, sorry, I'm just curious, ahead. Where you put somebody like Russell Henley in that category?
I don't think there's any pressure on Russell Henley. He's never in a conversation of who's the best player without a major. He's just walking through airports. No one recognizes him. He's cashing checks.
Top 10 player in the world.
He's on island time. He's in no rush to do anything. I don't think
this is the major for him if he's going to pick one off anyway. So
right.
Even though he gets the Georgia, anyone that went to Georgia gets the Georgia connection thing, but I don't think this is the one. Like, he's more likely to pick off a Shinnecock or an Open.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he hits the ball nowhere. I don't know. I just don't think he feels, I don't think there's like, this is also a little bit of like external pressure as well as internal pressure that I think the guys who get talked about, who get asked about these things. Then the last one for me is just the guys who I think people might start talking. People will start to just wonder. And that's Rahm. And I think Bryson, but only at Augusta. I think like Bryson will show up to the PGA and he wouldn't be on this list because I don't think the PGA moves him much. But I think for the Masters at this point, if he has like another close call, if he has another like he's around, he's in the final few groups on Sunday, shoots another 75, like I think then it becomes like, can this guy do it here? Does he need to use normal length clubs? What does he have to do to win here?
But I will say getting attention, like, winning is lucky. Getting into contention is not lucky. So I think you have to view those things a little differently. To me, and going back to like in sequential order, I think the person that probably puts the most pressure on himself is Hovland.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's purely like a comment on their personalities. Like I actually don't think Ludvig. Listen, I actually like Ludvig a lot, but there's something amiss there. There just is like. You can't swing it that well. And I don't know, like, he was terrible at the start of this year. Terrible. And has not sealed the deal in majors. He's had, two wins, one being an RSM.
Yeah. And then he won the Genesis, but it was at Torrey.
So I don't know. Like, if you're going to be, and he's 25 years old, like, he's not young. So I don't know. I'm not as high on Ludvig as a superstar as I think a lot of people are, because I mean, Spieth had won three majors by the 3 years earlier than this. Like the propensity of not even winning lesser tournaments to me is concerning. And when he's been in contention this year, he's like totally blown up.
Left miss Ludvig just. All over but the place. So
there's something there that to me he's not doesn't have that drive. Drive's not the right word. I hate
that's not
that.
Like, fair.
No, I don't. But he hasn't won, and winning is a skill.
Yeah, I don't think that. Yeah, and I don't think that has to do with drive.
No, I agree. That's
that might
I
have
I
to do with
immediately
to steal.
Respect my
that
recant.
Might have to do with some metal. In the words of Paul McGinley, just like a little bit of experience.
Think
I mean, the guy's won on every level he's played. And I think
that's an overstated comment. He's been very good at every level he's played.
I mean, he won PGA U, ran away with
wasn't
a
like,
bunch
wasn't
of tournaments
dominating.
In college, won the Jones Cup. Like the guy
I
won.
Don't think
the guy won a bunch in college. He's the number one amateur in the world, I think. At one point, he won professional. He won professional
like
events
doing
as
now.
No, he's not doing what Koivin's doing now.
Did he win? Did he win as an amateur at the Euro Tour?
He won as an amateur, like during COVID in Sweden. But he was 17, 18 years old. Of course, it counts. He's like winning. He's winning events. This is the thing I don't under. I there's a lot of people. We got how far are we into this? We're going to talk about Thor Bjornsson too. Like these guys are so young, and
talk,
I think
we can save Thor Bjornsson for
the PGA when I pick him number one overall.
you might even pick him in this tournament.
Just as a key in a keeper league.
Like he's going to get in off the alternate list.
he's just hanging out at the Waffle House down the IHOP down the road, waiting for a phone call. I think the Jordan Spieth, even like JT, skewed a lot of this stuff. Ludwig is still pretty young.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. He's played great in the Masters. He also didn't play like any majors as an amateur, which is kind of wild. So his first major was the Masters in 24. He's finished top five both years, I think. But you're right though. Like, I don't think he puts a lot of external pressure on himself, but man, if he has a good Masters again, but has a tough Sunday, it becomes a thing. There's guys this week who could create things for themselves that they don't want to create.
Totally.
So it's the beauty of the Masters. Want to get to our picks? Let's do it. All right. So the way we do this is snake draft. Obviously, once someone's picked, you can't be picked. They're gone off the board. We pick three guys and a dark horse. Dark horse, I said 50-1. Is that a fair line? Plus 5,000. This is a trickier one just because the field is so small.
There were
small.
Some that were above the line that I was shocked at and some that were below the line that I was shocked at.
I know, that's kind of why I picked it too. There were some interesting names. Some of them might have shifted because we have just a live bet. I'm going to let you pick first. Because I think you picked Scotty a couple times last year and won. So I'll give you the floor here.
I definitely picked Scotty at the Masters and did not win. I'm going to pick first who I think is going to win. I think certain people just like when there's a lot of negative momentum around them and they're like, F you, like I'm going to go out and show you who I am. And I just think that this is prime John Rahm territory right now.
Okay.
And having won on LIV, I do think matters. I think winning out there matters. I think coming in top 10 does not matter. I think winning out there does matter. And, you know, all this negative publicity that he's getting, very deservedly so, by the way, which we don't need to get into, but with the Ryder Cup stuff, I'm not on his side of it at all. I just think he's going to be like, yeah, I'll show you guys. You don't want me on the Ryder Cup team? All right, I'm going to here go and do this. So that's why I've got Rahm as my winner of the week.
Interesting. He was on my list. I didn't think you'd pick him first. He's playing great. I mean, he's playing great.
Data Golf loves him. I think he's going to win. Like, so that's why I'm picking him first. Like, you can never go wrong with picking Scotty first. You can always go wrong with picking Rory first, but I actually think Rahm's going
to
win.
I'm taking Scotty. I picked him in January to win this tournament. So if you're going to give him to me, I'll take him. I think he's one of those players. There's a few, you know, or every decade, there's always one or two guys who just play well at Augusta
even
National.
Years.
And then you've got the even year thing, little Arnie. Shout out every other year for 3 years.
Mickelson was an even year guy too.
Yep. 4, 6, and 10, right? So yeah, I'm taking Scotty. I think he just kind of gets it all together this week. New second father perspective.
Oh my God, maybe that was
a distraction. Who knows?
I do think it's very it's interesting that Meredith and the boys traveled there with them. Like the kids 10 days old, like that's a very, very young kid, and it's like a lot of responsibility that's on Meredith and like just mom of anyone who has like that young of a kid, and like I don't know, it's an interesting dynamic that they, I don't know what to make of it. I was just a little surprised. Maybe that helps Scotty because he is such a family man that he would feel like a pull back home and he won't feel it as much there. So it is a very interesting, like that kid is super young. I don't care if it's a private plane, like getting that kid on a plane. Like that's,
I know. Yeah, it is. Why
you're still like flying up and the ears popping of a kid that's 10, like that. It's a strange dynamic. I honestly don't know what to make of it. I was very surprised to hear that a 10 day old was, I don't know. Maybe they drove. I actually didn't hear about it.
Yeah, that's true too. I mean, they could be driving it to get here on Thursday and Scotty's already there. like a Scotty staying in the same house as this 10-day-old who's could be screaming through the night.
Oh, and he's got a toddler, right? Like toddlers aren't easy either. And like it is a very interesting dynamic, which I'm sure other players have gone through, just maybe not the number one player in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my first pick. Second pick is Xander.
Ooh.
I think he's just kind of lurking.
Lurking.
I think he's just lurking. I think he's slowly kind of rounding back into form. And I also kind of just think I think he's almost like the opposite of Rom, where you talked about Rom being like having a chip on his shoulder. I think Xander likes just being able to show up and play golf. And I think right now he's able to do that because he's a little bit off of the radar as far as just a favorite or people. I mean, I think he talked to the media today, but just, you know, he's a little bit past his two major year. And, you know, if he's going to win more majors, it's going to be in the next 2 years, or he's probably kind of done winning majors. That's typically how these things go. If you get too quickly, you got to get a third. You got to get a third pretty quick, or else it gets very, very hard to win the third major. Like that's just how it all falls here.
It'd be so funny if he won this, and the one leg that he was missing is very clearly the tournament that he's had the most success in.
I know, I know. Another thing I looked up, I was interested in how players did the year before the actual Masters. So like how did a guy finish? I wrote this all down, so let me find it here because it was interesting. Since 2000, I looked this up. Guess how many players since 2000 missed the cut the year before they won the next year's Masters? One, Patrick Reed is the only player this century to miss the cut and win the next year. The average finish is 21st place. And in the last 5 years, it's been 13th and 21. Matsuyama finished 13th, 22. Scheffler was 18th the year before. 23, Rahm was 27th. Scheffler finished 10th, and Rory finished 22nd in 24. So you have to like make the cut and actually play okay. And Xander, I think, was in the finished like 21st, 22nd. So that was another thing I was kind of looking at. So if you missed the cut last year, you were like, you're out of my picks. So that was another kind of thing I was looking at too as I was making my list.
Good stat.
Yeah, it was interesting. And then there's the other stat with that Kyle Porter throws out, where 11 of the last 13 have a 1.7 strokes gained or better. So there's 13 guys on the, there's like 11 guys on the list this year. But there's some funny ones on that list too.
Yeah.
Like Sepp Straka,
I feel like he misses a cut every single other week.
Yeah. He's a terrible major player.
He had that six shot at the British Open that everyone remembers him for, that chip shot. My pick, right? Patty Reed.
Oh, just live, boys. And okay. Another just guy, you're just back in the competition. You're just picking chips on shoulders.
Chips on shoulders. He plays that course very, very well. And I feel like he has been really gearing up for this tournament. Like really gearing up. I like him a lot. I talked about him earlier, so I don't need to go through it again. He's won a couple times, DP World Tour, lost in a playoff, coming like second again. Like the guy's just playing good golf and plays well at Augusta, which, you know, you probably don't have the advanced metrics on him given where he's played, but like he's got to be up there.
I don't have anything pulled up right now, but I started playing around with like, is he going to break just every European Tour, DP World Tour record? Is he going to win be like the most wins in a single season? Because it's five. It's like five or six wins is the record. Like Seve, I think one. Faldo might have won five or six. So it'd be fascinating if he just goes and stays out in Europe and wins at a like record-setting pace. Would be kind of cool. He seems like he might be able to do it.
I wonder if he wins a major, if he gets automatic status on tour.
It's not about status. It's about the suspension.
It is.
Yeah, I think so. I don't
now,
think,
but
I think he could earn status and just jump in August, maybe. But there's nothing going on in August, and he could play in the fall, I guess. Yeah, if he wins, I guess he just would defer until. But I think he's just suspended until August because that's the last time he played on LIV. So I might have that wrong, but that's how I assume it's going down.
So my last pick. I mean, this guy could legit win. Cam Young, obviously playing terrific.
Yeah.
He has played well at the Masters before. So like those two things, you kind of look at this stuff and it's who's playing well, who's played well at the Masters, and that's kind of where I was going with all my picks.
Yeah, he's on that list of guys with a 1.7 strokes gained or better. He missed the cut last year, which actually was part of the reason I kind of took him off. He's playing in his fifth major or his fifth Masters. And it's another kind of like the magic window is the 6th to the 11th. I actually wrote a note. Just he might be a year away from being kind of a top five favorite here, but he's definitely a good pick. I don't hate it. He was on my list of some of these other guys disappeared, but I know there's always one guy who's never going to disappear off of my list. I'm going to ride Rory. I'm going to take Rory this year because it is so open. Like I got Hideki written down. I have Fleetwood. Ludwig we left on the table. It's so open. Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe you can get comforted by a 17-year-old golfer when he walks off the 18th green. I don't know. I think if I'm going to pick somebody out of that group, I'd rather pick the guy who I'd like to root for. And
I mean, you've got Rory and defending. Scotty. I think people would take that.
Yeah, I know. Just a real, but we got our dark horses, which is where the fun.
I mean,
so who do you have as your dark horse?
It's interesting.
Unless you want to talk about Rory for a little bit.
I do think that this tournament's a little different. You could probably bring the dark horses down more than in other tournaments. Hideki's quasi a dark horse.
I know. That's why I was trying to figure out the right.
To me, somebody like Goderup is a dark horse. Kepka, dark horse. I said earlier about 20 people is probably way too high. But again, someone that has not that great of odds. Like, I don't think Justin Rose is a dark horse. I mean, geez, I'm looking at the odds. Patrick Reed, I didn't even look at these. Patrick Reed's way down there. Like, I don't think he's a dark horse.
Yeah. I mean, even someone like Shane Lowry is 68-1.
That one is the most. He and Akshay were the most bizarre ones for me.
Yeah.
Especially Lowry. Like Lowry's had good rounds there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he had a good year last year, and he was all, was it last year he was all pissed because they were asking about Rory?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah.
That Saturday, Saturday?
Yeah. And he'd shot 80 or something.
No, he just had a bad finish. He just had he didn't shoot 80 because he was still like, I'm going to go, I have a tournament to try to win tomorrow.
Yeah. It was, I do remember the press conference.
Yeah. He was just pissed. Anyways. So I guess, but he's 68-1. He's like 10-1 to finish top 10. Like, that's not a bad bet. Lowry's a major winner. If he's also like, I don't know if the firm and fast will matter. We've already made our picks, but like, it's kind of a guy who seems to play, doesn't love as opposed to what people might think. It doesn't seem like he loves to play in the rain as an Irishman.
No, I actually think he hates it. He's actually come out and said he hates it. Which is hilarious.
Yeah. So he might not be a bad little top 10 nugget.
My dark horse is the Højgaard twins.
Just both of them.
Both. Yeah. I guess. Yeah. One last name. If you can find
they're genetically the same, so you get both of them.
Yeah. And the reason, if you want me to pick one, I will. I still can't tell the difference between the two of them.
No, I can't either. They're identical. Sean, they're not supposed to.
I pay a lot of attention to golf. I can't tell you which one was on this past Ryder Cup and which one was on the one before.
Neither can I.
And like maybe if I really thought about it, I could. I can't tell you which one's better than the other because I feel like it's switched a lot.
Yeah.
And so I'm just
the Ryder Cup stuff.
I'm taking the Højgaard twins.
Twins.
Because I know one of them has actually played well there.
There was someone asking about, I don't know who, I don't know if it was Rasmus.
And it might
or,
be an underrated story, by the way, the fact that these twins are like studs in goal.
I know. Someone was asking one of those twins today about like about the Scandinavian golfers between, I think Norin's in the field, Ludvig's in the field. There's these two Danish, they're both from Denmark. And Hovland and Rasmus, Neergaard Pedersen, another Rasmus.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they asked Goddarup about his Danish, because Goddarup's got like a Danish grandmother. I think Goddarup was a little like, well, he was like, I don't speak Danish. So I think they asked if he speaks Danish. He's like, I've been there a couple times, but I'm pretty American. Oh, someone's just digging for a story, trying to find other Danes in the field. So are you really going to take both? Because I can just take two dark horses myself. I've got two people written down, and they're not the Højgaard twins.
No, well, I mean, I get both of them. So yeah, both. I honestly don't know which one to take. I mean, you can give me one, but I'm taking both of them.
I'll give you both.
Give me Rasmus. I don't know.
Okay. I didn't want to pick for you because then whoever I picked was going to win.
You can't take another one.
No, I'm not going to take the other one. He's off the table. I'm taking, oh man, I'm between two here. I'm going to take Matt McNealy.
Awesome.
I like rooting for him. And he had an okay major stretch last year, made every cut, like in the 20s, 30s. He's popped a little bit this year. He's obviously won on tour. But he's just, he also, I think, if it's firm, and I don't know if this makes a difference. He doesn't hit the ball very far, but I wonder if the firm and fast is going to like help some of the shorter guys and maybe bring some more dudes into the equation who don't hit it as far. If they can kind of use some slopes and get a little bit of extra.
I mean, that's where you see maybe Henley.
That is, yeah, right. So McNealy kind of falls in there too. So I'm taking Mav. Sorry, Mav, you'll probably now miss the cut. My apologies. That pick.
I don't know. I mean, your long shots usually do pretty well.
Yeah. All right. That's it. So you've got Rom, Reed, Cam Young, and Rasmus Højgaard. Don't call me Nikolai. And I've got Scotty, Xander, Rory, and Matt McNealy as my four. Some year we'll track this all appropriately. Maybe I'll start this year and we can figure out a way to. Ooh. Okay. Yep. Do you have one in mind?
Morikawa.
Yeah. Morikawa might be like a withdraw. He might not even play badly enough to miss the cut. I'm going to go with Fitz.
Ooh, really? I was thinking about even picking him to win.
I'm sorry. I cannot pick a guy who chips cross-handed to win at the Masters. I could not. And I'm looking at this list.
I mean, VJ is playing well. Chipping cross-handed, but
yeah. So I think maybe Fitzy misses the cut. Well, we're trying to pick someone high up who's playing all right, who might have a bad week. He'd be my pick.
I used to just pick Ian Poulter. So
I know. I like Fitz, so I feel bad. I'm not gonna root for him to miss the cut, but I think he might miss the cut. Anything else? Any last thoughts?
My one last thought is I did have two bets that I thought were kind of fun.
Oh yeah, you put them down here.
I just wrote
Albatross?
Them down. So again, like these are just fun things. So to make a hole in one in the tournament is -162, I think, or -160.
Okay.
That is a preposterous odds for that amount of people in a tournament. Like it is not like that. So you're betting just for something that's fun to happen, which it very well could happen, but that's not like the right odds for it. They're baking in everyone betting yes. +1600 for an albatross. Oh boy. Like that is +1600. You could put $50 down and win $800.
Yeah.
That'll pay for a lot of drinks.
When was the last albatross? It must have been Louis. We were due for one, is what I'm saying.
I think we're due for one. And there were a lot of close shots on 15 at the ANWA this year. So you never know.
Yeah. Yeah. And we had, but Stuart Sink get one last week, walk off on 18. They're out there. People, maybe they're coming. So you think you are saying that someone should bet that there will be a hole in one?
I'm saying that it's terrible odds. When I first started gambling, it was like -110, -110.
Yeah.
For yes,
it was
no,
like
hole in one.
Betting a spread.
But now because everyone, like the public, has started to bet on this stuff, everyone wants to bet yes, hole in one.
Yeah, they want to root for a hole in one.
And remember last year that pin was top right on 16 on Sunday.
Yeah.
That changes things. The other cool bets are they have the holes that you can bet hole in ones on, which are pretty cool. And so everyone but 16 is like significantly plus. So if you can pick a hole, it's fun stuff. Like, I mean, you don't need to throw a lot of money on it, but you know, without betting individual bets, those are kind of fun ones. And Albatross, I mean, hey man, somebody could go out there on two and just sling one in there.
Yeah. Especially if it's firm and fast, there might be some more guys trying to reach 13. Who knows what 13 is going to look like?
But they don't give the no side of these equations very much because the population is so small, because the field that can make an albatross is equivalent to a field that makes the cut at a normal tour event.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's 90 guys. It's like 93 guys this week, I think, or 89 guys.
Right. But like, and the seniors can't do it.
Right.
That are in there. And like, you're really significantly decreasing the chances.
And then it's smaller on the weekend because there's.
It gets even smaller. You're 50 guys, yeah. which is smaller.
Versus 70 and ties, yeah.
But the ball does roll a lot there. So,
yeah. Anyway, and it's going to be firm and fast.
I can't wait.
Can't wait either. Well, enjoy the week. And thanks for doing this again, Burke.
I will do it until you kick me off.
All right. We'll see you.
See ya.